This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by BlackStarLabs.com, home of the best tasting protein powder out there. Don't forget to mention the FitCast when you place your order. Well, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 151. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and first off with me is back and now pregnant, Cassandra Forsythe. What's up, Cass?
I'm pregnant, apparently.
I mean, what happened?
I don't know. I don't know. Do I have to explain how you get pregnant? Kevin, is that something you don't know?
We're going to save that for next week.
Okay, we'll talk about the birds and bees next week.
Exclusive,
yeah, it's all good.
Interview with Cassandra Forsythe on getting pregnant.
Yes, we'll talk about birds and bees, and then we'll watch a little.
It's all about the downloads, Cass, you know, that stuff burns more downloads.
Yes, and then I also have my RD finally, so I can stop
watching. Yes, congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, so that means I'm going to be a lot more stupid when it comes to nutrition.
Oh, yes.
Unfortunately, but...
No, we'll take what we can get.
Yeah, I know.
Also, we have back with us Lee Peel of LeePeel.com.
What up, Kevin?
That's good, Lee. Just feed the fire. And we have a special guest this week, Alan Cosgrove, who I guess we exiled from the show, but now he's back.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Kevin. I appreciate it.
It's no problem. You know, I know there was some bad blood, but we got it all cleared up.
I didn't realize until I looked at the archives and I was like, I haven't been on for a long time. Kevin hates me.
Oh, it's only like, I don't know, 10 months? 8 months? I don't know.
So too long.
I'm sorry.
I have things to say.
I understand that. And that's why we got you back on. It's always good to have you on, and I'm sure we're going to have some great discussions in a couple minutes.
Oh, I don't know about that, but I'm excited anyway.
Well, I'm going to plan on it, and we'll see what happens. The first thing I want to quickly mention is thanks for all the feedback from everyone with episode 150. Lou came on and did a great had a great discussion with John and I. And for people that did send in clips for the show, make sure to email me at kevin@thefitcast.com, and I'll start sending you guys out the T-shirts that I promised. Also, you get a bonus interview after we talk with Alan with Chris Frankel of Fitness Anywhere, where he's going to talk about the TRX straps and a little bit about how they came about and some great uses for them. And we will have him again on in a couple weeks after this week, and you'll understand why. The next thing I want to quickly talk about is the Dan John kettlebell DVD arrived in my mail yesterday, and I watched it last night. It was fantastic. It's part two of the DVD seminar series that he did for his book tour. You can pick that up. I'll throw a link for it in the show notes. It's very good. It runs about an hour and 20 minutes or so. Just all about perfecting the swing and the get up, which is something that unfortunately we see done wrong a lot in the gym, or at least where I work. And one last thing, I want to shout out to my client Kara, who listens to the show, and she's getting married next week. And since being together in late January, she's lost 60 pounds. So she lost 60 pounds for a wedding,
wow,
which is just fantastic. And she's doing a great job. And hopefully, it was to the point. I don't know if I've told this story in the air, but she had to. It cost her an extra $2,000 just because she couldn't fit in the dress she originally bought. It was too big. So she had, wow, she had to buy a separate dress. So I guess that's one of those good expenses to have when it comes to the wedding.
Absolutely. Congratulations.
Yay, Kara.
And Lee, you got Body by Eats coming up, or what's going on there?
I do. I'm so swamped. I may be alive right now. I don't know. But I think it's – I actually had to look at my own website to see what the countdown was. But I did. I was like, wait, when is it? Yeah, but it's like 9 days away, and it's pretty. It should be good, though. I'm really excited to just get it launched and out there and hear what people have to say about it.
Very cool. We'll make sure to talk about that a little bit more next week as it leads up to the release. But we're here to talk to Mr. Cosgrove. And again, like you said, we haven't had him on the show in a while, so I have some questions for him, and we got some questions from the listeners, and we're just going to see where it goes from here. But the first one that I want to ask you is what kind of progressions do you take with your clients when they come to you in an obese state?
This must be the most boring question you've ever asked on this show, Kevin.
I think it's a good question because I even when I talked to Mike Robertson, I talked to him about this too, because we get a lot of clients in terms of assessments, because we, like, I have clients that come in who will be, you know, 50, 60, 100 pounds overweight, and you obviously aren't going to train them as someone who's, you know, 10 or 15 pounds overweight, and I think it's good for discussion, so I'm defending myself there.
Wow. Kevin's gotten puff since the last time I was on. All right. here's what I do that's the same. I establish where they want to go in terms of a long-term program, right? So maybe it's 12, 16 weeks. And then I divide that up into three to four four-week phases. And then I divide that up into a four-week periodization model for each week. We call it an introduction week, a base week, an overload week, and the shock week. That's where we increase the intensity. Then I take that first week and I divide it up by how many days that they can train. So if they can only give me 3 days, I divide it into three workouts. If they can only give me two, I divide it into two. So that's my plan first. Then I look at how I evaluate them, and I evaluate them fairly simply. I know that they need to move more, and I know that they need to burn more calories. I know that they probably sit all day and therefore have shortened hip flexors and a weak posterior chain. And we evaluate everyone who comes in. We use a postural evaluation, which is we look at how the muscular system is sitting at rest, which gives you a sort of length-tension relationship there. Then I look at range of motion, which is really a passive assessment of posture. Like, now I'm moving them. And then we use Gray Cook and Lee Burton's functional movement screen to look at what compensations they make during function. So that gives me a hierarchy of movements that I need to train. Regardless of who's in front of me, I see what they can do. There's no use saying, right, everybody needs to squat until you've looked at how someone squats. And I see how it breaks down. And then I allocate the movement patterns that need to be trained in a needs basis, like a priority. So the most important one, the one which needs the most work, is trained first on day one and so on. And I allocate that over the days. And then I basically just pick an appropriate challenge. So if I was training you, Kevin, I might do some type of squat with external load. If I was training someone who couldn't squat with their body weight, we may squat with maybe in a power rack with a band to unload them, or in next to the free motion machine so they unload. But it's actually easier to train someone who's that deconditioned, because you can really make a difference with the least challenging exercise variable. But there's actually more similarities than there are differences. Like, I think that people see an obese person and you're like, well, what are you going to do? Well, as Lou and I talked about in New Rules of Lifting, the fundamental movement patterns are the same. It's just that if I'm going to train a lunge pattern, they may be using a shorter range of motion, and I may be unloading them by having them hold on to something. With someone who's more dynamic, I may be using external load and a higher rate of speed of movement. That it's not, it's really not, if you design your programs long term, it's really not that difficult. We just scale back the intensity and range of motion usually.
Gotcha. This is kind of related, but in terms of training, can you give some examples of weight training circuits used as finishers or in place of intervals on a bike or an elliptical? And if you have a client, say, twice a week and they had no injuries, mobility problems, or health risks, would you use weighted circuits or complexes instead of any kind of like sprints on a bike or machine-based cardio?
Now, that's a good question, Kevin. That's
Thanks.
Much better.
Your other question was such a fail, Kevin.
Here's the idea how that this sort of thing came about is if you start looking at the mechanism of cardio for weight loss or even interval training, I think the stats are that running a mile or jogging a mile is about 1,500 repetitions, and even at a low speed, it's about double body weight per rep. So when you start to think about a deconditioned person or maybe someone with injuries, it just doesn't make sense for a weight loss perspective to do that many repetitions at that high an intensity in order just to burn some calories, right? So if the traditional, I mean, I know it varies, but let's assume that a 1 mile burns 100 calories. I have to do 1,500 reps at double body weight to get 100 calories. Well, what if I put together a body weight circuit of maybe a squat, a row, some kind of push, something that's very light, and I'm not really overloading the muscular system, I might be able to burn those 100 calories in the same time frame, but only doing 100 total reps at a very low load, at much less than body weight. So really, it's just a case of, on one hand, if the goal is to burn calories and you're not trying to improve a running performance, then the tool which we use to burn those calories is just a variable. It really doesn't matter. So if I can burn it with less load and less repetitions in the same time frame, then that has to be a superior choice in that situation. So that's exactly what I do with most of our clients. We've, over time, we sort of dropped a lot of steady state work with our clients and moved into interval work. And I'd say that over the past maybe 18 months to 2 years, we've actually stopped really doing interval work, and we've done more, I guess, metabolic circuits where we use this on the non-strength training day, where it's kind of like a old school circuit training program with calisthenics and movements. So I actually do that more often than we do interval training. With someone who's a little more advanced, I think you can do all this sort of stuff with the TRX and maybe using a weighted vest. The barbell complex stuff that is interesting because I seem to have become associated with that. It was Isfan Javorek that started doing that with his athletes, and my friend Robert Dosimidios was doing that with his guys. I started playing with it with some of our kids that went back to college, and they couldn't superset or circuit the traditional routines. So basically a complex was designed as a circuit with one piece of equipment. So that's how that came up. There's nothing real magical about that. It just allowed people to do a volume of work with one piece of equipment in one space. So that's really where that came from. But yeah, to answer your question, summarize that, it's, I actually prefer the body weight, I guess, metabolic circuits, for want of a better term, as opposed to the high volume of repetitions involved with traditional cardio stuff.
And you said you generally do use like a barbell complex or a body weight circuits. Do you ever, I know you have like a lot of tools available to you. If you go to your website, you have, I mean, when I visited you, you had ropes, you had stuff you can do with med balls, you have kettlebells, you have the barbell complexes, body weight work you can do. You know, generally what's your favorite setup to use, or do you just like kind of rotate everything?
We look at the movements that we want to train, and then we just apply a load to that. So if I said we use the kettlebell mostly, and people who don't have a kettlebell, well, it doesn't matter. I just look at the movements and apply a load. The last circuit that one of the metabolic classes at the gym, the last one I took, we used sandbag, the TRX, a kettlebell, and a medicine ball as part of the circuit. But you could do that whole thing with just the sandbag or just the kettlebell. I really like the sandbag and the kettlebell. The problem a lot of people do when they're doing metabolic circuits is I've found that, in general, females go too light in their strength work, so you have to teach them to go heavy. But when you're doing metabolic classes, everyone seems to go heavy. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a strength session. It's a metabolic session. It's, you know, pushing the sled or the prowler or something like that. The idea is not to make it so heavy that it feels like doing heavy squats and lunges. It's a method of cardio training. So we use a lot of it. I think I really like a kettlebell. And if you give me a kettlebell, a TRX, and some space, I think you could really get a lot of things done. You can get a lot of mileage out of those two pieces of equipment.
This is kind of off the outline, but I know that you now have like a smoothie bar at your place, and I have to ask you, do you offer any kind of Greens Plus additive?
For long-time listeners of the show, yes, we do.
Nice. Maybe they'll come back now.
It's the basic idea is, I think, sound. I just, if you add something, if you work with real clients, you add something that makes the shake taste bad, you're going to reduce compliance.
Sure, fair enough.
And I think that's the reality that I think is we have that in the shake bar, which was it was Rachel's idea, by the way. I was very resistant to this, and it's actually been extremely profitable. If we get down to the bottom, it's very popular amongst our clients, and it's making business sense. And the shakes are all basically organic whey protein and fruit. Really, is all we have. We don't have anything else, but we do have a vegetable based supplement that can be added.
Gotcha.
Can I ask a quick question?
Kevin is the interviewer. That's it.
With your sandbag training, what weight of sandbags do you use with your clients? We've got a 30 and a 60-pound sandbag at my gym, and we may also have a 20, I think, as well. We've got three of them, 20, 30, and 60. And I guess it's just teaching women how to hold the sandbag properly and engage their abs, which is the kind of limiting factor in how much they can actually
That we have a bunch of different weights, but I think that during the classes, it's probably a 30-pound and a 60-pound are the most used. Uh-huh. Josh Henkin gave me a 100-pound one, which, if you haven't trained with sandbags, I can do a lot of exercises with a 100-pound dumbbells or barbell, but that sandbag will break you. But the phrase that we come up with is, it becomes a self-limiting exercise. Mm-hmm. You really can't, if you have good form and good exercise selection, a lot of these exercises are useful because you can't really compensate if you do them properly. Mm-hmm. So the squat exercise becomes a core exercise because it's self-limiting. Some of the stuff Gray Cook does with the kneeling chops and stuff, you're creating a situation where you're putting one muscle group or one part of the body as the self-limiting part, where you're working the rest of the body, that once that movement tires, you can't do it. A good example is a bottom-up kettlebell clean and press. Mm. A lot of people will see that and think that it's grip strength, but it's really more about engaging the core and the glutes to keep the whole body tight, so that there's no energy leaks, for want of a better phrase, to stabilize that. And the sandbag is exactly the same. So the key is, it's with those classes, is the goal is to get work done, to perform our work period. So we'll adjust the load downward so that you can get that work done. Mm-hmm. So if you can go for a minute with a 60-pound sandbag, I'd like to go a little heavier. But if you can't, I'll go a little lighter. The load used there is the least relevant part of the entire thing.
Right, yeah. Our favorite one with the sandbag is doing a Zercher squat, where we drop it and then pick it up and Zercher squat with it and drop it. Mm. That's fun because it's sort of like a clean, but you're holding it more in the front.
It's just so metabolically demanding. But
oh, yeah.
it's also extremely simple for people to get. Like, it doesn't require a whole lot of coaching for them to, hey, lift this up, drop it again. And the cool thing is, with a lot of that stuff, when you can drop the sandbag, you can eliminate a lot of eccentric work, so people don't get sore. They do a lot of metabolic work, but they can go hard the next day in a strength session if they wanted to.
Well, the only thing that gets sore in them on that one, not only, but the major thing is their core. Most of my clients are like, oh, my God, I never felt my abs like that before. And we didn't even do crunches. I'm like, fancy that.
I think it's amazing that when you work with people, that if I make your lower back sore, you're afraid and you'll complain to me. If I make your abs sore, you're smiling. It's a real interesting dynamic that we're so programmed that the muscles of the lower back should never be fatigued or have any sort of DOMS. But the abs, if you can make them sore, and the obliques are, and with females, the butt.
Man, oh, yeah.
You're golden if you can leave people crippled through the abs and butts.
Yeah, they sign up for 10 more sessions when you do
that. Such a true statement. Such a true statement.
All right, then the next one, I'll get through my questions as quickly as possible. I just had some. A little over a year ago, I got to try out the quad blaster that Tom Venuto sent over to you. And over the last 15 or so months, what is your conclusion as it merits in a training facility, commercial or not? And the reason why I bring this back up is Tom was on a couple months ago, and he still sings the praises of it, and you know, says it's one of the best quad developing exercises out there. So how do you feel now?
Well, now that you've set it up like that, I feel that it's an excellent tool. I do. The idea of everything is you move from an isolated approach when you're looking at rehabilitating or developing a muscle group to an integrated approach. I don't think you can develop a single muscle too far out of proportion to the kinetic chain. So pure isolation exercises have a very limited place. What the quad blaster does is a good example of a self-limiting exercise. Is it trains the squat pattern. For those you're not familiar with it, it's training the squat pattern very similar to a sissy squat, where you're really overloading the quad in relation to the hips and glutes, the hamstrings and glutes, sorry. So you're looking at a what I would call an isolated integrated exercise that's very quad dominant. It's a great tool. At Results Fitness, we run what I call a principle-based program, is that we look at principles of overload and intensity, equal and opposite effect, etc. And then we see if these tools can apply. I don't look at, is the quad blaster good? Is the kettlebell good? I look at the principles of training and do these tools fit these principles? And the quad blaster is very cool. It's one of these things that looks way... harder. It looks way easier than it is. It's quite hard. We had a female client recently, and she'd come to us after the operation on her hip, and that was an excellent tool in her program, because I could really start overloading the legs and create a fatigue and a training effect there without having to get as many reps again in the joint. So yeah, it's a great tool. I'd have said that even if you hadn't had Tom on the show, but it's an excellent tool. I think that once you understand the principles of training, then the more tools you have at your disposal, the better.
Well, now that we're talking about tools, I'll throw this in there too. Is there anything that you've kind of picked up as tools that are going to help you get the results that you want? Anything that's new? Like, I know that the TRX is big now. Those are really cool. But has anything else shown up at the facility and you found very useful?
A few things. The TRX is really good. It's interesting because we design all our programs and we have all our exercises in a database. So when somebody shows me something, deep down I think I hope that it sucks, because I don't want to have to go back and rewrite all our protocols. But Chris Frankel introduced me to the TRX, and I was like, yeah, whatever, you can do inverted rows on it and you can do standing chest presses. But he came out and did a staff training session for me, and it blew me away how many variations he did. So I was like, damn, I have to buy a whole bunch now. And so I got a whole bunch, and we introduced them into our program, so that was great. A couple of years ago, it was kettlebells that I'm not a huge fan of the certification process and all these guys. It's just an object, But we attended a bunch of seminars. I brought in people to train my staff, and I think that added a component that we were missing. And more recently, it's something called the sand bell, which is essentially a sandbag that can be handled with one hand. So I guess it's the equivalent of a sandbag dumbbell. And we're using a lot of that right now. I don't have a lot of we're kind of, the word analysis is the first four letters really describe me. And I, so I track everything. If I introduce something, I'll introduce it, and I'll watch client results and also client enthusiasm with things and see how it goes. So I don't have enough data to really talk about the Sandbell too much, but it my gut instinct is it fulfills all the principles of training that we go through, and it's another cool tool that you can start doing some unilateral sandbag work, and it works quite well there.
Last week we talked with Lou about the fitness industry, and he hit on a lot of the stuff that's going on in the print and in terms of writing. And it has been, as you said, it's been a while since we last talked. And you know, how do you feel that the fitness industry has changed or evolved or devolved over the last year or so? And you know, everyone's always talking about the commercial gym, how it's going to become extinct. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
I have to be honest. Lou asked me a while ago to write an article about common mistakes in the commercial gym, and I'm just not in places other than, like, I think women doing deadlifts and chin-ups and, you know, hardcore sandbag circuits is normal stuff. So I'm not around these commercial gyms that often, but there's a lot of people who complain about the economy. 2008, we had our best year ever, and we'll surpass that in 2009 based on our projections, just right now going into quarter four. Good trainers are making more money than ever before. The gap is just getting bigger between good trainers and poor trainers. So I think what we're seeing now is that there's no longer a middle of the road facility or service being provided. That people are either bad and they're dying, or they're good and they're making more money. All the guys I talk to that I get to spend time with when I'm doing the speaking tours, they're all reporting increased revenues. So I think that the people, a basic rule is if clients have stopped coming and tell you that they can't afford it, they're basically telling you that you're no longer worth the value associated with that fee. If you're seeing that, you have to question your abilities. I think people are not. I think the gap is growing between people that are good and people that aren't. So I think what you'll see in the fitness industry is that I think probably about 5 years ago, most trainers had no marketing skills at all and no website and nothing like that. And now, fast forward, I've got people with websites and lists writing articles and ebooks who don't have any clients or programming skills. So it's always a pendulum where there's an underreaction and overreaction. But I think now the consumer's spending habits have changed radically, and I think we're seeing that filter down to the profession. But it's I talked to Mike Boyle a couple of weeks ago, and we were saying that when we speak at seminars, you're seeing the top percent of the field, but each year there's maybe a very small returning people. Like it's always new people, and it's all the numbers aren't growing. They're growing, but they're not growing spectacularly. So I think that it's a real, if you're good, and anybody who's listening to this, the fact that you took the time to invest some of your time in a little bit of education means you're probably one of the better ones. I think it's an exciting time for us to really take our professions to the next level.
Right, Cass Early, do you have anything before we go on?
No, I think that was really good.
I do agree about the, actually Lee and I were kind of talking about this, though, that there's a lot of people out there that really have no skills but are very good at marketing themselves. Well, they have the skill of marketing, but their skills
I think too, though, that you find, and maybe this is because I get a lot of contacts from people, you know, they ask you to do interviews or what have you, tryouts and things. And I think that you start to see like the same information and the same type of marketing and the same, you know, I don't like watered down material, because sometimes it's still good material, but it's just rehashed, you know, and I think that you start to be able to see the difference between people who are going and looking at e-zine articles for 5 minutes and copy pasting and getting their ideas from that, and spending 20 hours, you know, reading the Malcolm Gladwell or the Seth Godin, but which I love. I love that stuff, by the way, but they spend all their time doing that versus the people that spend more of their time either working with people or doing the research or both. And I think it becomes clear for maybe professionals to see through it, but I still worry about the average consumer being able to see through it sometimes. But I think eventually the results are going to tell you everything you need to know.
So. Yeah, I think you're right on there, but it's hard to be the like defender of the fitness profession world, and I think a lot of people there's people out there who are trying to do things better, and there's people out there who are trying to rehash the same stuff to try to give themselves a leg up mm-hmm. on their career, and that will never work because your mm-hmm. foundation's not there. But there's also the other side. There's people who seem to have made it their mission in life just to criticize everyone, and mm-hmm. I think that doesn't help anyone either. You know, like anybody can criticize a method, but can you improve it? Can you help people? Mm-hmm. I always think it's funny that in the United States, more people die due to obesity than die of malnutrition or starvation. Yet fitness trainers are arguing who has the best fat loss program. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Just choose one. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you believe in reducing calories and doing a ton of aerobic exercise and you're helping people and you really care, God bless you. I think that's great. If you're on the flip side and you think that you do more of a eat more often, don't focus on calories, G-flux type thing that John Berardi does, and you like weight training, then God bless you. As long as you're helping people and trying to and being authentic, if I tell you something that you don't agree with, that's completely fine. But I'm not lying. I'm just telling you what I've experienced. And I think that as long as you keep that, you'll always succeed by being authentic and trying to help people. That you just can't. It's easy to be good in our field because the standard is so bad. It just requires a little bit of effort to be one of the best there is.
Mm-hmm. You know, what is it that they say? No statue was ever erected of a critic.
Oh, I never heard that. That's good.
I've never heard that.
I'm going to start saying that and people will think it's me.
I like that saying. Because I think there's a big difference between trying to talk about the variables and maybe deconstruct for the sake of campfire talk, if you will. And mm-hmm. just absolutely becoming one-minded and zoned. It's funny because a lot of the most open-minded, you know, don't be so absolute people are very closed off in their non-absolute of absolutism. So I think that there's a lot of room for saying, you know, what works for you can work for you. But I
think what we see now is that there's the end user is becoming confused and are trying to mix approaches. Mm. And it's like trying to follow a Pritikin diet and an Atkins diet because they both make sense on some level, you know. And I think that the lesson that I could teach people is just choose something, try it 100%, like really commit to trying it and mm. take your own notes and use that as your own education. I don't think there's anyone out there who's absolutely trying to help people who's wrong. Like, they all have their own opinions and experiences that shape that, but they're really, really, if they're really trying to help people, there's probably something to it that you should look at. Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Fass and I were talking today and just saying that, I mean, we've been in school forever. forever. And we both say that, well, one of my professors actually told me this when I was a master's student, and her postdoc said to her, the more she knew, the less she realized she knew. And it's sort of like the more you become educated or you deal in research, like I've done some research, and you sort of realize that there's so many unknowns, and then you kind of see these people out there with their marketing ideas, and this is the absolute, and this is going to be the end all be all. And you go, it's just not that easy. And you don't say much, so, because it's hard to, I don't know, I guess, defend it, because there's not enough
research. There's just not enough evidence. And yes, it's great to help people. And just as long as you know everyone, I guess, is different and will respond to things differently than the next person. And
For sure. I think education definitely provides more questions than it does answers. Yeah. That's how I feel. I wrote something about weight training. Despite seeming to burn the same amount of calories as aerobic training, seems to result in more fat loss. And I get, as I was saying before the call, I get people emailing me saying, hey, the numbers don't add up. And I'm like, yeah, I know, crazy. I don't know why it happens. Like, we've seen studies that maybe weight training burns more calories than we originally thought. I've seen studies showing that the EPOC is way higher with weight training, but it's still only a few calories. It's not a huge number. Mm-hmm. But what I do know is that when I do this, this happens, and I'm too busy trying to help people and get my clients in better shape to try to figure out the mechanisms why. Mm-hmm. I don't think we really, my friend Robert, he always says that when you do heavy training, something magical happens in the period between. And I think that's probably as close as we know, because when we say, it's EPOC and here's what happens here, and then we actually analyze it, we're like, that doesn't add up. But we see that if you do A, B happens. And the more I do it, I've never seen a study done on the type of training that we do at Results Fitness, but if I have a lot of questions as to how I could make it better. But it just, as you say, is every answer that you get, you know, inspires like 2 to 3 more questions. You know, it's hard when I'm known in the fitness profession a little bit for speaking and writing articles. And the general idea, I've talked to Lou Schuller about this, you'll get an article from a magazine that will say, we need dumbbells, a 6 exercise dumbbell only routine, and we can shoot 2 shots per exercise, so you can't do any combination lifts. And then the article appears and it doesn't mention the restrictions that you were given. It just says, this is Alan Cosgrove's, you know, conditioning program for football players. But it was never football players who only had dumbbells and no other equipment. So what I'm known for sometimes is not what we do at Results Fitness, because I get to evaluate you and adjust based on who you are and your response to every variable. Whereas with articles, and when I do a 60-minute presentation, I have to, it's real generic advice. You know? So I think that's hard when I'd love to just meet everybody, and then you could tweak everybody's program and everybody's business model and really help them. But as you say, it's every time the best I can come up with is for most people most of the time. That's how you write articles, you know?
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, we have our first question from a reader, and this is from Anna. And Anna says, my question has to do with pre-workout nutrition. I'm transitioning back from maintenance into a deficit, and I'm concerned about energy levels for my workouts. Have you found any particular macronutrient ratios to be effective for pre-workout, and would I change this up for strength sessions versus a high interval intensity session? Thanks for your help, Anna.
Thanks for the question, Anna. No. basically, what we're doing here is when you're in a deficit, you're concerned about your energy levels for your workouts, first thing to do is make sure the deficit is not too severe. Because then the circle begins that you can't train hard and you're so tired you don't move the rest of the day. So any deficit you've made is just closed through lack of activity the rest of the time. I think you're just talking about moving calories around workouts now, as opposed to anything magical. If I was working with you in person, I'd probably try a few different things. For most people, it's a liquid meal. Seems to work better if you're going to come in and train. But in terms of an exact macronutrient ratio, anybody who tells you that exactly is probably lying. I've seen one recently where it was, if you're at 20% body fat, you get, you know, 15 grams of carbs a day, and if you're over that, you get 0.025 grams of carbs. And I was like, really? you've narrowed this down to a thousandth of a gram with all your clients. That you figured this out is 0.004 calories. You tried 0.05 and that was too much. And you tried 0.03 and that wasn't enough. So I would look at your training log, Anna, and you're striving to increase your weights or do more work or perform more intervals, or even if you're doing it on a treadmill, track, maybe track the calories burned as a relative measure of what you're doing and your heart rate, and then play with different things. I think probably a mixture of protein and carbs and fats, like a traditional shake, is great. But I can only see what works for you by looking at what you ate and how good the workout was, and then adjusting those variables and seeing if I can get a better effect. So I really don't have a absolutely particular macronutrient ratio as in 40-30-30 or anything like that that I know works. I know empty stomach is really hard for most people to train effectively. And a lot of the evidence, the idea that you would burn more fat during it doesn't seem to pan out when you look at a 24-hour window. So I would just eat something. And I would probably, I don't think I would change it too much for a strength session or HIIT session. So, sorry, I don't really have an answer there.
I just have a personal anecdote. I taught boot camp this morning, and one of the girls, it was on her third round, she started getting very white, had to sit down. And I said, what's going on? I mean, last time we had class, you were fine. She's like, oh, I haven't really eaten anything all this week and I don't have any energy. And I was like, exactly. She said the reason she's doing is she's trying to fit into a dress she has to wear for a wedding next weekend. And yes, maybe you have to, you know, yes, maybe we have to go into slight deficits, or well, we do, we have to go into some kind of deficit to lose some weights, you know, whether that be increasing energy or decreasing intake, whatever. But I find a lot of times when we always increase our deficits, like in food intake, our exercise efforts suffer, and we don't burn as many calories as we could as if we just cranked up the intensity and did some harder things.
Yeah.
It's a massive circle that if you don't have enough food in the system, you can't train hard. Therefore, you don't burn as many calories. Therefore, you may be overeating anyway. So it just becomes a circle that I'm probably on the side of the continuum that says eat more and train harder. But the approach on the reverse is to train, eat less and train easier is just as valid. But we see the big picture that we're probably doing the same thing. You know, but she's tried to train on no food thinking there would be a better result. And there's a lesser result. I've seen people in the gym who come in the mornings and we see that same white zombie looking face. And you're like, you know, you didn't eat, did you? You know, and they're like, no, and I didn't have time. I'm like, well, the bad news is you've now done half a workout and you feel like you're going to die. Right? And the idea is I don't believe in workouts that makes anyone feel miserable. And I think training in that state makes people feel miserable. But you're right on with that, is that she could have trained harder and gotten a better result having had a snack. You know, half a cup of yogurt or something could have just had a killer workout.
And Anna's question said, she said what macro ratio would be effective, but I'm not sure what effective she was referring to, like effective for having a better workout or effective for more fat loss. And I guess really the answer is the same for both. It's put something in your stomach, even if it's carbs, fat, protein, whatever, something that's going to give you energy so you can kick ass during that workout and really burn some fat and burn it all throughout the day instead of just, you know, oh my gosh, I don't have energy to do this next set or this next round or whatever you're doing. So the effectiveness is eating.
Fat loss is about weeks and months of effort. It's not about a workout, right? It's about a big picture. Is a Lee's book, The Fat Loss Troubleshooter, points out. you like that, right?
Oh, I love you now.
It's not about you're like, oh, wait, you're doing sets of 12. You need to be doing sets of 10. That's unlikely to make the difference. It's a big picture approach. So I always, when questions are focused on such a minute portion of what we do, the focus is a little off. I'd like to look at the you know, if your goal is to lose a pound of fat per week, are you doing that? in which case everything's right, don't change anything. Mm-hmm. So I do think that when you're in a deficit, moving more of your calories to around the workout may help you to train harder and recover better, and that may have an accumulative effect. But I don't think it would be magical if I had a special ratio pre-workout that I'm going to see anything amazing at the end.
Mm-hmm. And if I can throw in too, I continue to do a lot of study with people, and whenever, and I mean this is just almost every single time, whenever I feed them and give them pre-workout nutrition, they not only train harder in their workouts, they're less exhausted after workouts, even if not having post-workout nutrition, and they continue to function better throughout the day. Yeah, so, if anything, I can just be such a massive proponent for pre-workout nutrition.
Well, I'm with you 100% there. I think that it's one of these things where researchers and the internet guys are looking at what to have. I don't care. I'm like, have something.
Just eat.
Like, we have, I see guys who spend an inordinate amount of time trying to dispute claims made by, people selling workout shakes. I'm like, have something. Yeah. I bet I'm 80% correct when I say have something. And the other 20% as to what you should have, it is probably such a minute variable that it may not even matter at the end.
Yep.
Sorry, Anna, because we just probably confused you more than I helped you.
Well, the one thing I think maybe with pre-workout nutrition that you might want to avoid is something just straight up carbs that could cause a blood glucose crash partway through your workout if you're that sensitive. But then the other thing is that your muscles will liberate some glucose while you're working out, so can maintain blood glucose concentration. So if you have someone that maybe has problems maintaining sugar levels while they're working out and tend to get kind of spacey, maybe kind of a mixed meal is better than just a straight up one nutrient over another, especially carbs.
And I would say in general, I support a mixed meal too.
Oh, sorry.
I think a mixed meal definitely works because I would also, I've never tested it, but I also assume that a big cup of olive oil would probably not be good. that's completely anecdotal, and I have no research to support that, but that's my guess.
Well, you might feel like throwing up partway through your workout. That might be the issue. Like,
yeah.
Whatever, I chug canola before I train. I'm hardcore.
Oh, no, but canola oil is the worst.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Canadian, don't you know? Hey?
Hey? Canada, eh?
That's what they use for the ice skates, so you can go faster.
Yeah, canola's evil. You should all die if we eat canola oil. Okay, but it's totally
different. Wow.
I'm Canadian, and I grew up with canola fields all around me, so I have this hard time taking in that drinking canola oil, or, well, not drinking, well, I guess drinking canola oil is bad, but canola oil's
out of control. Next time I'll say olive.
There you go.
Gosh, you know what happens now, though, right? It will appear on an internet forum. If we drink canola oil, we'll die. And everybody will say what an idiot you are, and then you'll email me about why are people so mean. That's the stuff.
No, I'm not saying that canola oil will make you die. I'm saying that I think canola oil is healthy oil, and that's where people are probably going to be like, oh, it's just because she's Canadian and blah, blah, came from her country. And I'm like, hell yeah.
Bias. It's such a bias. Cass, don't even. We know you have an agenda.
Yeah.
You guys are nuts. What am I doing here?
We have another question. Should I go ahead there, Kevin, with Bob?
Why not?
Okay. Bob has a great question. He says, first of all, he says he loves your work and always learns a lot when he reads your blog or articles.
I like Bob already. This Bob is going to be a good question.
Yes, Bob is wonderful. Bob says, my question is related more to the business side of training. Often you have emphasized how the future of personal training lies in small group classes rather than one-on-one. From an economic standpoint, that makes perfect sense. But any trainer is likely to encounter a very wide range of fitness levels when presented with a group of new clients. It's like being a school teacher faced with a classroom where some of the children haven't yet learned to read and others are already at the college level. Aside from varying fitness starting points, any good trainer will also perform a thorough assessment of each new client and create a program to assess that specific client's issues. How do you go about structuring a group program that addresses each individual's weaknesses, imbalances, etc.? Thank you, Bob.
Okay, this is a question where Bob has decided that small group training is not the way to go because of all those analogies and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. The misinterpretation that Bob has made is that small group training is generic programming. I use the term semi-private training to distinguish this from a group class. Every person in the group has a unique program and is evaluated separately. So Bob's completely correct that you have to evaluate every client and create an individualized program. The fact that I'm taking 2 to 3 people through their workout at the same time in no way changes their programs. It's the same as doing one-on-one, except I have someone else there. The programming doesn't change. It's not generic. When we do group classes at our facility, they are a completely balanced metabolic session, but they are not customized at all. They're designed as a cardio session as opposed to a thing. And in order to qualify for our membership, you have to get a 15 six, or 16 level on the functional movement screen with no asymmetries. If you get less than that, you're not cleared. You have to. We fill to you towards a different membership. So the real answer is that semi-private training is not a generic workout. You will encounter a wide range of fitness levels, and you do have to create different programs to address each client's specific needs. So all the criticisms levied at semi-private training are based on the idea that we don't individualize the program. That's not true. The program is completely different for everybody. Well, of course, there's similarities. That we're on a template-driven system. You're not starting with a blank sheet with every 45-year-old female client who's never been in a gym before and wants to lose 10 pounds and currently has a desk job. There's going to be certain similarities in those routines. Mm-hmm. Right? So you're working from a template, but it is not generic programming. That's mm-hmm. the answer to Bob's question are how do I go about structuring a group program that addresses each individual's weaknesses. You cannot structure a group program to address individuals. You have to structure individual programs, and they may show up together. It's the equivalent of going to a martial arts class and seeing that there's a green belt and a red belt and a black belt working out in the same class, or going to a physical therapy clinic and seeing that there's someone rehabbing a knee and a shoulder at the same time. Their protocols are completely unique. But the supervision may be looking at two things at once, you know? Mm. So that was an easy answer.
I also think when he brings up the school question, and, you know, if you take a look at public schooling, I think that that's a bad example as the majority. But if you look at schools that are more diverse in the way that they teach, they will section up students to fit with corresponding students and mentoring. And that's, I think, another thing to throw in, Bob, is that it's also organization once you've achieved the individualization that has to occur. So once you know what you're doing in the individual sense, you know, organized properly, and then you can group people together without them all doing the same thing. And I think that definitely just missing that. But next question, Alan, is from JJ Miller. And Jay says, "Hey guys, great show. Word up, Lee." That's weird saying that to myself. "Alan, what is your price structure for your semi-privates and classes? And how does it change for someone who wants to do both? And why do you use this particular structure? When you pay your trainers, do you go off a percentage or a salary? Also, when is the new program design manual coming out? Thanks, JJ Miller."
That's like 17 questions, JJ. You get one. Choosing one. That's it. All our fees are on the website, which is www.results-fitness.com. An annual, what we call all-access membership, which includes a training session a week. The gym membership is $239 a month. The groups are about $139 a month, but these are on annual contracts. Anyone who does semi-private training gets unlimited group classes as part of their membership. So if they want to do both, they get both. Why do we use this particular structure? Well, there's only three ways to coach someone, right? And a one-on-one, a semi-private situation, and a group situation. One-on-one is not, in this economy, I don't think is economically viable for a lot of people. It doesn't make business sense from our point of view. The group training is really more of a metabolic type class. What we were finding is that we would recommend interval training on days in between strength sessions, and interval training is miserable. No one likes it. So we created classes based around interval training, which were more fun. So that's how we figured out that structure. I pay all my employees work off. We have a pyramid of the level of employee, and the rate of pay is determined entirely on their educational ability, not on longevity, and it's not on a percentage. If I do a sale at my gym, something I never really do, but if I did a sale and cut my prices by 50%, my staff wouldn't have to take a hit. But if demand for our services got so high that I had to charge more, it's not necessarily a given that my staff would get a raise. So they get paid on their expertise. So it's a base rate. It's neither a percentage or a salary. It's a base rate. New program design manual, I don't really know. We just finished the seminar where we shot it and we introduced the new manual, so with a few tweaks and stuff, and when we get the footage from the seminar, we'll have a by end of the year, I hope.
Cass?
Oh, hi.
What's up, Cass?
Hi, I was thinking about this question because we do this at our gym, but that we actually we have a price for if they're doing personal training, well, not one-on-one, but that they do unlimited personal training, which is semi-private training, and then they get to do the boot camps that I do 4 times a week, or they can just do boot camps. And a lot of times they end up doing they move up once they start doing the boot camps. They see the semi-private and want to do that as well.
Yeah, you're in basically the same model that if you do semi-private, the bigger classes are included, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
See how I said A? So you understood me?
I did. I got it.
So I said that in Canadian.
Yes, thank you. I understand.
Wow. No, okay. It's you know, I'll just throw in there, it's interesting where I currently work. It's like I kind of tried to fight tooth and nail to do some kind of semi-private setup to make it a little bit easier for my clients to train a little bit more and to pick up some more clients. And no matter what, they wouldn't do it, even though, because it wouldn't work in their computers, and it's more of a corporate thing. And that's the only reason why I think, you know, the big box gyms are kind of missing out on this setup right now.
It's fascinating that you would let a software dictate what services you give.
That's what it was, yeah. It just couldn't make it work in the computers, so they wouldn't know how to charge people or how to pay me for it. So
the thing people misinterpret is you don't have to choose. You have personal training one-on-one, and you have group classes in most big box gyms. This is just something in between, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You don't have to pick a side. You know, economically, the problem with one-on-one training is fitness is a hard sell as it is, right? Mm-hmm. You've got most gyms are like $40 or $50 a month. So you've got to sign a contract for $40 or $50 a month, and you have to come in 3 times a week, and you have to train hard, and you have to stop eating your favorite foods, and you have to miss Monday night football because it's bench press day.
Mm-hmm. And Friday.
Friday is bench press day. It's Monday, and
no, it's Monday. Monday where I work.
But it's Friday, so guys go to the bar with their chests. So like, yeah.
But if personal training nationally has a,
I never thought about guys showing off their chests at a bar on Monday night. But thanks, Cass. Thanks.
Oh, Friday night.
Oh, Friday night.
Keep going on, Cass Grove.
The personal training one-on-one has about a 3% penetration rate into the fitness going public. So you need 100 people who are crazy enough to come in and train. And if they ever stop, it all goes away, mm-hmm. and commit to coming in. You have to have 100 of them before you can pick up 3 one-on-one clients. So you're just targeting such a small end of the spectrum that it makes sense to offer something else, offer the semi-private option and offer a group option. It's just different service offerings for people. And I think it's really interesting is that people, it's like if I say, hey, you know, you should do weight training, they think I mean it instead of going rollerblading because they like it. You can add stuff, you know. And I think semi-private training for most people is a way to add a service offering to your clients or to your prospects. You don't have to take anything else away. I mean, you can still do it, but it's really it's just something that we've found to be more effective in it. People keep asking me about it, but everybody seems to not want to do it. And there's a good example. Your software won't allow you to charge for it, so let's just not offer it. You know, if the software breaks tomorrow, let's just shut the gym.
Well, no, they do. Like, if the computers go down, you can't do anything at the gym, so.
Really?
That's awesome.
Just absurd.
Yeah.
Love your gym, don't you, Kevin?
Well, you know what? We'll see.
Soon you'll love your gym when you move to the other
Well,
gym.
We're not talking about them.
Okay. Okay, so I have another Bob, but his name is Robert. And he says, Alan, you read a lot, which is great.
No, I don't. Yeah.
Okay, he says you read a lot.
That just shuts that question down right away.
Okay,
no,
done,
I don't.
Next. Yeah. He says, you read a lot, often outside the lifting realm. What are you reading now, I guess, outside of the lifting realm? That's good now.
I usually read in three areas. I read training, business, and for fun. Right now in training, I'm reading The Theory and Application of Modern Strength and Power Methods, which is a promotional copy, the second edition, which is a promotional copy I got sent by Christian Thibodeau and Tony Schwartz. For business, I'm reading a book by Chip Conley called Peak, which is really an interpretation of how businesses can use Maslow's hierarchy of human needs to determine their service offerings, which is really good. And for fun, I just finished Craig Ferguson's autobiography, just called American on Purpose, and it's about
I've heard he was on the radio.
Yeah,
he's a Scottish guy, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
He moved from Scotland and he does the Late Show, and it's really about his journey here and like becoming a citizen. It's quite funny because there's a lot of differences between me and him, obviously, but there are some similarities. But it was a fun read. So that's really the three areas I'm looking at.
He has a cool Scottish accent, too, just like you, Alan.
He used to be Drew Carey's boss.
Really?
Yeah, he had that English accent when he was on that show.
Yeah.
Oh. I thought his interview was really cool. He was really funny and witty. Made me want to buy his book because I'm also American by choice. Is that what it is?
I don't know. He has a good
Wow, a little hesitant there, huh?
We're sending you back for that one, Cass.
I'm actually not really American yet because I'm still just a permanent resident. Are you American yet, Alan?
Yeah, I did my citizenship last year. He has a good line in the last chapter, and it says something like, Scotland made me what I am, but America allowed me to be it. America's the greatest idea for a country that anyone has ever come up with so far, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, you guys haven't lived in Canada yet. Just kidding.
See, when you get your citizenship cast, the first thing they do is they take your green card off you at the ceremony and they just throw it in a bin. And you're like, wait, that took me forever to get.
Yeah, and a lot of money.
Right now I'm surrounded by immigration officials at this ceremony and you just threw my green card away. I have no evidence that I'm here legally. This is a terrifying little zone where they might be able to deport you before they give you your citizenship certificate.
Well, you know, one person who was American went up to Canada, so there's some good things about Canada. It'd be okay if I got deported. I'd be okay with it. Mr. Berardi is the person I was thinking of. He's
Dr.
taking
Berardi
over Canada.
To you.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Wait, but then he has to call me doctor as well.
That's right. So it's often professional respect around here. Yeah.
Okay.
The next question we kind of already asked, but no, we'll kind of shoot it in a different direction. What are your favorite exercises to use the TRX for? You mentioned a couple of them, but was there anything else?
They have so many. A lot of the multi-planar stuff, which as you're moving in different directions, is really good. The whole concept of using it to unload someone, so you can do an overhead squat and unload it is good. inverted rowing is a good one. Suspended lunge is good. Some of the core stuff is just ridiculously hard. Yeah. I don't even know why. You do push-ups with your feet in the TRX. It's just, man, it's hard. I don't know how. I used to do a push-up and prone jackknife combination on the stability ball a lot. But you can do a lot of those. And the TRX, they call it the atomic push-up, which is really, I'm going to start making names like that for my exercises, the laser beam ones and stuff like that. It's really the same exercise, but it's just so much harder on the TRX. It's not always necessarily a good thing, you know, making an exercise harder, but it was a good addition to our stuff. So, yeah, they have a lot of stuff. A really cool organization that seems to... It's the idea of only doing TRX doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But the idea of not having any sort of suspended training in your programs at this point, it doesn't make any sense either. I think it's a really good tool. The core stuff is just excellent.
Lyricast, do you guys have any of those, or like blast straps?
We have blast straps at my gym, and we do lots of blast strap push-ups, inverted rows. We also do like Supermans, which you're standing up with your hands in blast straps and you roll out basically like Superman out and then come back in. I love inverted rows, but they're hard. Now that my weight is going up, it gets harder every day. I'm like, oh, what the heck? I used to do more of these.
That's progressive resistance. Yeah.
Pretty much. Like next day, I'm like, whoa. That's 2 pounds that I didn't have yesterday. Okay, it's not quite that bad, but still.
And same in regards to kettlebells. Do you have any staples of exercise that you use in the circuits? Or also, you offer kettlebell classes there too, right?
Yeah, the classes they started off as pure kettlebell classes, and they've sort of become a real hybrid now, where the kettlebell is just a piece of it. I really like the classes, but we found with our clients, they weren't really, and our prospects, they weren't really attracted to that idea. And to base any workout around a single piece of equipment is just, with my philosophies on training, it doesn't make sense to just limit yourself to one piece of equipment. So now they're classes that are just a metabolic class with a variety of tools. The favorite exercise, I think, friend, go on.
I went to your website, Alan Cosgrove, and it had music on it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a new website. You like that?
I'm sorry.
We didn't hear any music. We just heard you shouting, oh.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
I think that the kettlebell, Jason Brown always says you get a lot of mileage out of the kettlebell swing. I think that's true. I think it's a fantastic exercise. The kettlebell swing and the Turkish get-up are probably the biggest two. But again, I don't limit myself to telling people like the exercises we use the most frequently. It's just like asking me what rep range I use the most frequently. It's kind of an irrelevant question until you see the whole program design. You know? So, to answer the question as it was asked, swings and Turkish get-ups are the ones that we use the most.
I have a question about the swings, Alan, and maybe you do or don't know. I've heard from someone else on the pregnancy realm that using a kettlebell swing isn't recommended because you shouldn't use your body weight while you're pregnant to do an exercise. I don't know if that's right or not, and I don't know if you have any insight. I'm trying to find some answers on it, but, I mean, the research on pregnancy is like, completely non-existent.
You should not use your body weight when you're pregnant. Is that what they said?
Yes, not use your body weight. So a kettlebell swing, because you know you're popping your hips to get that kettlebell to move. So basically,
yeah, but that's like saying you shouldn't walk across the room because that uses your body weight.
Well, shit, I'm just going to lay down all day then.
There it goes, like, the sensor.
Like, you shouldn't do a step up. You shouldn't do a lunge. You shouldn't walk up a flight of stairs because these all use your body weight. I mean, what should you do? Sit down and move on a weight? but how do you move the weight without moving your arms, which is part of your body weight? Whoever said that just has some real logical flaws in their thinking.
If I told you who said it, it's someone that we were just talking about just a second ago, who's a doctor.
Oh, wow.
I can't understand how you can do anything without using your body weight. I could see that the only thing I could see is that because of the movement involves the bending, mm-hmm. I'm sure there would be some contraindications at some point. I mean, there's contraindications in the third trimester that you shouldn't lie down at all.
Yeah.
After the fourth month, you're not supposed to lie on your back. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that, but I can't. I could see perhaps at some point the kettlebell swing becomes contraindicated, but the idea that you shouldn't use your body weight, mm-hmm. I know that there's some fear of core temperature increases and its effect on the fetus, but I don't
think... been refuted, actually.
Really?
Pressure changes. Yeah, that actually has been pretty much refuted, but pressure changes are... Jonathan and I were just talking about this again today. Pressure changes are still quite of concern. So I was doing on Facebook, I have me doing a 70-pound log clean and press. And Jonathan got really mad at me for that. But he just said there's too much pressure on my core doing that. So, and then kettlebell swings, I've heard that too. So
the idea of not using your body weight doesn't, there may be other reasons, but that one doesn't hold water for me because... locomotion and walking on a treadmill or anything like that is all using your body weight still. So,
yeah, I wasn't sure. I was just wondering if you heard.
Right.
Yeah, and our gym for kettlebells, we like doing a kettlebell burpee push-up complex. Mm-hmm. So a deadlift kettlebell burpee push-up. So you deadlift, put the dumb kettlebells down, jump back to a burpee position, push up, come back, jump forwards, you know, stand up and do a deadlift. I don't know where we learned that.
It's
a fun one.
Anecdotally, we had a client maybe about a month ago. She took the kettlebell class on, I think, Thursday evening. Friday morning, she was a planned. They induced the birth. It was planned, and
cool.
She trained on Saturday morning. So
yes, that's
like
neat.
One of the coolest stories I've heard is that people are like, yeah. You know, she's working on Thursday, and she's like, "Yeah, I won't be in tomorrow, guys. I'm having a baby, but I'll be back Saturday." And they're the stuff that I think like that's cool, real life stuff that I like doing. You know, you got an athlete and ready for a competition. That's cool, and you help somebody do that. But these are like real things that I really like. She's pretty impressive.
That's cool. I hope that's me. Okay, enough about me. Do you want me to do the next question,
go
Kevin,
for it.
Or is that for Lee?
You can do it up, Cass.
Oh, okay. can you give us an update on LiftStrong? It seems that the Elite FTS line has been selling well. What is the future of LiftStrong?
Oh, it's really been a great thing. The idea came when I was sick that Rach started doing triathlons to raise money, and the endurance community, just in terms of fundraising, just really kicked the butt of the strength training community for any charity. So I contacted a bunch of people and asked them, I said, hey, send me an article for my manual, otherwise I'll tell everybody that you said no. And so they all sent me it, and it just was just a name for a book, really, to try to raise some money that was really my personal way of giving back to pay it forward, that, you know, I'm alive because of science, which was really funded largely by donations, not by the government or anything like that. It was funded by donations. So I wanted to continue to pay it forward. Dave and the Elite FTS were a great help when we started that by having an additional distribution channel for us to sell it. So we raised a bunch of money. When I see how many people read, for example, a T-Nation article of mine, and I compare that to the number of sales we've had total, it's really depressing, actually. But, you know, we've made a difference. What happened is one of the other, we call it Team Elite FTS, is all the guys on staff at Elite Fitness. Bob Youngs was diagnosed with leukemia earlier this year, so sort of raised awareness again within our community.
So Dave came up with the idea to do a Lithstrong clothing line, which has been selling quite well. So, I mean, what's next for Lithstrong is I'd like to do a second edition. It's actually real difficult to coordinate everybody to do it and put it together. And considering we've sold a lot, but considering how few we've sold compared to how much we could have makes it, I don't know what the next direction is, but I don't think it's up to me anymore. I think everybody can, we all should do something for charities that perhaps not leukemia and lymphoma. Rachel and I do a lot of work for Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, obviously, but our niece has cerebral palsy, so we work with the Challenged Athletes Foundation to raise money for those kids. I think everybody should have a charity that they feel strongly about, and they should do something about it. Lithstrong goes to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, but if you need my permission, you can do a Lithstrong fundraiser and use it for your own charity. Dave's donating all the proceeds from the clothing line. So, I don't know, we get a lot of people contacting us about wanting to do they want to do a powerlifting meet or something and raise money for the society. It's not me you go through, you just go straight to the society. The money goes direct to them. We don't take it. There's no profit or administration costs that I deal with. Everything goes to the society. So if you want to do that, then absolutely. And if you need my help to mention it, I'd love to help you. But how many CDs do we have to sell to get rid of cancer? I don't know. We're not close. Right? Sell a million of them, we'll maybe make a dent in the market. It seems absurd that banks and financial institutions lie to people and screw things up. And when they're finished screwing things up, the government sends them money to fix it. And people are dying every day with cancer, and chemotherapy knocks the hell out of people. And the government cuts back funding for cancer. You know, it ends up we have to do it. There's the end of my political rant. I hope it just grows and grows, and that I'm not known as a guy who runs a gym in California and writes articles. I'm known as the guy that was instrumental in changing how we raise money for cancer research. So that's really, where does it go from here? Wherever you guys listening want to take it. That's the real reason, the real answer.
We had Dave on a couple of weeks ago, and he brought up a couple of great points. One of it being, the strength community, the strength training community, we're a bunch of tough bastards, and we always say we're a close-knit group, but when it comes to something like with Bob or just in Lithstrong in general, they never put up. They just shut up. And, I think if you want to get a little bit more respect from the rest of the population out there, from this community that thinks that a lot of you guys that are listening to the show are just gym rats and you're weird. Like, people think that we're weird because we go to the gym and, we're dedicated to something like that. Show them that we're just like everyone else. We all, it's very unfortunate. Like, I haven't had anyone in my close family stricken with cancer until, surprisingly, a week before I talked to Dave. And, now it just... It hits home even harder. So I think it's really, if it's a $20, $25, $30 CD, that's a great way to give. You can give directly. You can go to Elite and you can get the T-shirts that Dave and the guys there put together are fantastic. And one cool thing is, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, I started wearing the T-shirts to the gym, and people do come up to you. They're going to ask you, Lithstrong, what is that? What does that mean? And, you can start, creating some awareness to what it's about and, what you're trying to promote. And, it's a $15 T-shirt, or it's a, it's a $30 CD, or it's getting a $5 shaker bottle that can just kind of get it out there and get at least people talking a little bit more and just keeping it fresh in their minds. There's something that still needs to be fought.
Well, the thing I always say that... articles when I talk about this is that if you've listened this far to the Fitcast, the only reason that you're able to listen to me is because people donated money to these causes, and I'm alive as a result of that. they can trace the Gleevec's number one drug used in treating leukemia. That was discovered by donations from the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. So if you've listened this far and you've learned one thing, or even I made you laugh for a wee second, or made you think, then I'm alive because of this funding. Go right now to Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and donate a dollar. This chest is free. Right? Just donate a dollar. It all counts. Right? It all goes towards helping people. You know, and it helped funding research and helped funding care. It's just that it really all counts. We can't do it. It's a Tony Shea, who's the founder of Zappos, always said, if you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And the only way we're going to go far with this is just everybody who chips in. So as soon as you finish listening to this, you can listen to it on iTunes and while you're on your computer, and just go over to Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and just donate a dollar. They'll take your dollar. Right? That's the thing, is you don't have to. People like, I want to do something big before I donate. You know, a dollar's big. Everything counts. You know, that's the reality of this situation.
Well, what do you guys think? Do you think we should wrap it up there? I think it's a good spot as any.
That's good.
Well, Alan, again, thanks for taking your time on a Sunday to talk with us. And, you know, we'll definitely make sure to not make it more than, like, what's the deadline? 3 months, 6 months? But, like, I don't know when we should have you on next before I get...
I'm just glad that you invited me back. I thought I was excommunicated.
Well, like I
said... Church of the Fit Cast.
Like I said, anytime you have something you want to talk about, anytime you want to come on, you are invited. It would be my pleasure.
Stop lying. You only invited me because you didn't have anybody who said they would do it today.
No, actually, Chad Waterbury turned me down this week, so I had to fill in real quick, unfortunately. Maybe we'll have him on next week.
Chad texted me last night to see if I wanted to meet up for beers. He's available.
Fine. Okay. Well, anyways, we have a great interview with Chris Frankel coming up on TRX. And also, as I mentioned before, we're going to have Chris on again in a couple weeks. If you have any specific questions on the TRX, and hopefully you guys can get a set of those in your hand, you can go to fitnessanywhere.com. They're like $150 for the set. It comes with DVDs and all that great stuff that will get you going. And there's tons of videos on the website. And of course, for Mr. Cosgrove, you can go to alancosgrove.com.
Actually, go to liftstrong.com.
There you go.
My website.
liftstrong.com. There you have it. And I'll also make sure to post links for all that stuff and the apparel line at Elite. You know, again, I think if you can start wearing this stuff out there and have people asking you questions about it, it will make a difference. And that's very cool stuff. So, Alan, again, thanks for taking the time on Sunday. And again, I promise to have you on again sometime in the future, I guess.
Cheers, Kevin. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, take care.
Thanks.
Our guest this week is Chris Frankel. He holds a master's degree and is completing his doctorate in exercise science with over 25 years of experience as a trainer and coach. Chris travels as a strength and conditioning specialist, exercise physiologist, and lecturer from his home in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He splits his time as an instructor at the University of New Mexico in the Department of Health, Education, Exercise, and Sports Science at his training studio, traveling with clients and lecturing to fitness professionals and coaches. Chris brings a unique blend of academic and practical exercise to his research, teaching, and coaching. Being involved in all three areas helps to define and answer substantive questions related to coaching human performance. And Chris, the reason why I wanted to get you on the show is because you're also associated with Fitness Anywhere and the product that many of our listeners out there have probably heard of by now, called the TRX system. So first off, thanks so much for taking some time and spending with us on the show and to talk about this great product.
Oh, my pleasure. I've been a fan of the show for a while. I'm happy to do it.
Well, let's start off by just talking about what TRX suspension training is.
What Fitness Anywhere has done with the space of suspension training is any time that your body weight is or portion of your body weight suspended from an overhead anchor point, there's some interesting things that it allows you to do. So what we did was kind of systematized a bunch of exercises and applications to load exercises, unload exercises, develop cueing for those exercises, and really start to delve into some of the science and best practices on how to do those for top-level athletes. We have a big footprint in the military. We're in some of the military schools now as well, all the way down to we just finished a part of a pilot study for a fall prevention program for people 65 years or older who've had a fall in the last 6 months. So really being able to scale exercise all across the board and using suspension training, body weight exercise to meet everybody's needs depending on what they're trying to get after.
Now, we actually have a pair of these. We just got a pair of these at our gym at Boston Sports Club in Woburn. And, I've seen people, a lot of the members are very intrigued about the TRX suspension training. And, a lot of them have been coming up and asking questions about, what can we do with these and what are the best exercises to use the product with? And, what are some of kind of your favorite exercises or your go-to exercises? And, what are some of the things that people might not think of using the TRX suspension straps for?
Well, the first thing that the people look at them and the things that come most naturally to them is doing a suspended press or a bodyweight press, just putting your hands on the handles, and doing a chest press or something that looks like a push-up. And the next most obvious thing is doing a row. And, in fact, when we first started out and hit the road and went to NFL camps or spent some time with some of the top trainers in the country, we would show them about 50 or 60 exercises because we were so excited about everything we could do. And at the end of the day, they would come back and they would just remember the most, the most basic ones, what they really liked, the unstable environment of doing the presses and rows. And it's fantastic for that because when your hands are on the handles and your feet are on the ground, one of our trainers likes to say there's a lot that happens between your hands and your feet in terms of stabilizing your core and having to fight rotational forces. And so using it for a press in a row is fantastic. There's some research that came out of the same lab that Stu McGill is working out of. A guy named Tyson Beach did some suspended presses, and then they also looked at some suspended rows and actually had the science to show that you had an enhanced core activation just by trying to control your center of gravity. But I would say that some of the more interesting and really effective exercises we're finding for sports performance coaches and all the way down to regular fitness people is there's just a tremendous amount of leg exercises you can do, a TRX-supported lunge, some squats where you can unload a movement to kind of create the range of motion and the motor pattern that you want. And then just by either changing your mental approach to the exercise or changing your body position just a little bit, you can start to take an unloaded exercise and just load a little bit more resistance on top of it so it can scale all the way up and scale all the way down. We get old school guys. I just came back from a couple of D1 schools where, at the end of the day in the strength conditioning programs, they want their guys to squat, they want them to bench, they want them to clean. And we showed them a couple of exercises that actually enhance the squat. So it's not so much that you're going to be able to take someone who can squat 400 pounds and put additional load on them using the TRX, but you can fix their movement, you can check their movement pattern, you can get them comfortable in the bottom of a squat. So within 5 or 10 minutes, they can actually feel a difference in their heavy squats. So it's an incredible full-body exercise piece of equipment, but we've really started to focus in a lot more on hips and lower body stuff because at the end of the day, I'm still more of a coach and always more concerned with sports performance. And if I can get guys to, get those hips into those exercises a little bit more, take a little stress off the knees and low back, then we're always happy to do that.
Let's talk a little bit about the uses for the straps and why they're so attractive to a lot of people out there. Some of the real groups that I can think of are people that are putting together things like boot camps or We have a lot of listeners that send in tons of questions about setting up their own home gym, and we talked a little bit about this before the interview, but you know, people are starting to buy sets of kettlebells. They're starting to buy, you know, sets of adjustable dumbbells, and they're buying their own benches. And some of them are even going as far as like building their own squat racks and power racks and things like that. So, you know, how does this fit in as like a piece of a home gym, or even have you seen a lot of people using these as part of their boot camp setup as well?
Yeah, definitely. In fact, in terms of boot camp, usually what ends up happening is you can come up with a ton of bodyweight exercises and a lot of pushing exercises and leg exercises. What they usually end up being a little shortage of, especially depending on the fitness level of your participants, is a lot of pulling exercises. And just being able to throw the TRX up on a fence, on a tree, on the playground equipment there, you know, gives you a couple of stations where it can unload, do some unloaded bodyweight exercises, load up your legs, but a ton of pulling exercises. And the other great thing in that boot camp environment, it's easy to carry with you, but then people are walking by and they see what's going on. And we have tons of stories of people who have two or three TRXs out there in conjunction with their med balls and whatever else they're using for their boot camp. And people come up and ask about that. And they end up generating a little bit of business just because either they've seen us and they're trying to leverage a little bit on, you know, the popularity of the TRX, or they haven't seen it and they're just intrigued about what it can do. And in terms of the home gym, the one thing we've gone out of our way to do is to say, hey, we're not here to say this is the only piece of equipment you'll ever need. In fact, we've gone out of our way to partner with other people in the industry that we think we make a great complement with. And I think Mike Boyle was the one who said he thinks this is probably the best accessory you can put on your power rack, whether it be in a gym setting or your home setting. But in terms of the home user, yeah, we're getting great response from the home users. They can set it up on their door. They can set it up on the ceiling. They can set it up outside, and they use it, you know, as a standalone piece, or they're using it in conjunction actually with kettlebells. In fact, in the next 2 or 3 months, we're going to have a nice little partnership with a kettlebell personality out there where we're going to put the two pieces of equipment together just because they really complement each other really well. You have to be able to control your body, control what we talk about being body weight competent before you're starting to load it. But in terms of the home market, yeah, it's fantastic. I always have two or three hanging up in my backyard. My kids can get out there and play with it. We can get out there, get a quick workout in. And literally, I mean, I know it sounds like a corny tagline from someone else's commercial. In the time you used to get dressed and drive to the gym, you know, you're pretty much done with your workout and you're back in the shower getting ready for the rest of the day.
Yeah, one thing I have a lot of clients that travel that are literally flying to the West Coast a lot, and they're spending a couple days out there, and then they end up not training just because they literally don't have the time, or they're not comfortable with the equipment that they have at the hotel gym or any kind of local gym setup that they have. And now, I started thinking about, you know, I really like to recommend them something. I was looking at the TRX, and then the first thing that popped up in my head is, man, how are they going to set this up if they want to do it in their hotel room if they have nothing to hang it on? And you guys already have that. You guys already hit on that with, like, a door anchor that you can actually set up so you can just throw it around the door to your hotel room and go at it right there.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those products that people kick themselves and say, wow, why didn't I think of this before? But it's so simple. And as somebody who spends way too much time on the road, I think my record this year is I was actually home for only 5 days in the month of February. I literally am training on the TRX on the road just about all the time. You take, you take the door anchor, which fits over the door, close the door, lock the door. And even if you're, I mean, I'm a hotel expert. Some of the hotels have a very narrow hallway right as you walk in. You can still get, you know, 75-80% of your typical workout in that little confined space there. And you start to add some of the other programming we have on there, some, you know, in-place metabolic conditioning on the TRX, off the TRX. And if you want to go at it for 45 minutes an hour, you can pretty much crush yourself. If you only have 20 minutes before you get your first thing to do in the day, good to go. I know a lot of people also find some time to maybe get in a round of tennis or get to the gym for a short period of time, or for a round of golf. A lot of our traveling clients just have it in their tennis bag or their golf bag, and they'll throw it up on something in the existing gym in the hotel or the club they go to, and they'll use it as their movement prep and their stretching and their workout, depending on their time. So, yeah, it's just phenomenal what we tell them, you know, what we let them know, especially for the military when they're getting deployed. It weighs less than 2 pounds. It takes up the space of a pair of tennis shoes, and I mean, you can't beat it. You can't beat it for hitting the road, and it's really a no-compromise workout on the road or at home.
Yeah, and one thing for all those stronger guys out there that think they can bench press a house, if you try really using the TRXs and doing things like inverted rows and you know, challenging yourself with like single-legged push-ups and stuff, like, trust me, you're going to get your butt kicked with these things. They are really cool. So, Chris, next thing I want to talk about is, you know, you guys as a company, where do you see yourselves fitting in the industry in general and across programming for fitness?
Well, we've really tried to come at the industry and leverage the things that people understand that they need. They know they need strength, and everybody looks at the TRX as a way to load up and make movements harder, which is really something that we focused on early out, because people saw two straps hanging there. They say, oh, I'm not going to be able to get much of a workout on it. And like you just mentioned, especially you get men and women who are used to pushing heavy weights, and they start saying, you know what, body weight exercise, what's that going to do for us? And then through our experience in the military and a lot of the other tactical services, and I really took this this concept, I don't know if it was his or not, from a guy named Mark Stevenson, who was at NSCA for a while for the tactical strength and conditioning. When their tactical guys would come in, whether it be military or SWAT, they were literally doing nothing but body weight and probably of that body weight, 90% they're only doing TRX. So they would become body weight competent before you start to load it up. And then you start to listen to someone like a Gray Cook, who's making sure that the movement patterns and the mobility and the stability is there unloaded. Mm-hmm. Once again, before you start loading it up, you know, his idea being that once you're starting to load a movement, that's just saying that, you know, you're so confident with that movement and you're so comfortable with that movement pattern that you want to load it up and now get it locked in. So we're able to go at it from that standpoint, but we've also found this just to be a tremendous flexibility tool and strength tool and metabolic tool. And while we typically think of flexibility and strength and balance and power as being separate components of fitness, it really starts to blur the line in that if you can unload a movement, and we'll take something simple like a rollout, which is just, we kind of take the concept of the old wheel that you put on the floor. We can unload that rollout movement, not so much to see how much shoulder flexion you can move into, but how well can you maintain body alignment, and just add a little bit of resistance on there. And it goes from creating range of motion in the shoulders while you're maintaining stability in the core, to changing body angle, going to single leg work, and then combining balance. And then you can start to speed it up and get a little bit more power. And then you can take all that core stability you just generated there, throw 1 foot in, and do a lunging pattern or single leg squatting pattern and start to jump off the ground. So now we've added some balance and some power in there as well. So what we're trying to do is just let everybody know, no matter what your approach to movement and exercise and training is, at the end of the day, you're going to have to move your body in three-dimensional space. And whether this becomes the primary focus of your resistance training for someone who might not be as fit or have demands of not putting on a lot of body weight, or someone who's, you know, benching 400 or 500 pounds, and being able to just make sure you're clearing the mobility of your shoulder and the stability of your shoulder girdle, that suspension training becomes a big rock in the whole training arsenal, but it has a place in everybody's program. Yeah. We're basically trying to take over the world. So we have small sites. We want everybody to be using it for where it fits into their program, because we think it actually does fit in just about everybody's program.
Yeah, you brought up shoulder stability, and that's something that's huge that I have to look at with some of my clients. That I have some clients that are, you know, they're the weekend warriors that also like to still go out there and they like to play tennis. Or I have one guy who's in a baseball league and just having to work on their shoulder stability and scapular stability is huge. And that's, again, that's something that I can get that benefit out of, having them doing push-ups on the TRX, which is awesome. But, just wrapping up, Chris, where can people pick these up, and, what kind of packages should people look for, and who are these best for? Looking at, the home gym person, or someone that's also training at a commercial gym, or the commercial gym doesn't have these and they want to bring them there, and the office worker that's traveling all the time, like what kind of different options do you guys have for them?
Well, the best place to start is to go to the website, which is www.fitnessanywhere.com. And you can directly buy the product there, but the site is, it's a non-pay site. Everything's free on there. There's videos on there. There's full descriptions of the DVDs, the content that we have. And then there's several different product bundles. So we have, for the fitness professional, we have some TRXs that come with DVDs that talk about how to get people to use it. We have something called Trainer Basics on there, and All Body Express. And then for the traveler, there's packages that come with the door anchor. For golfers, there's a specific golf program. We have Todd Durkin that's done some field sports on there. But if you go to the product drop-down list, they'll talk about the different bundles. But then there's also forums, and there's articles, and there's all kinds of things you can find out about the product before you even decide to pull the trigger and buy one, because we're finding that the more people know, whether it's an end user or fitness professional, the more they know about our product and the more they know about the company, it ends up being better for everybody involved. They understand what they're getting, and then they understand that we've really defined the space and really are the leaders and innovators in the space, from a science perspective all the way down to education, content, and the quality of the product we deliver. So website, definitely the best place to go. And then after that, anytime anybody comes to one of our workshops, they become an affiliate, and it's easy to sign up as an affiliate if you haven't been to one of our workshops yet, and then you can sell these to your clients and actually make a little bit of money on the side for it as well. And all that's listed on the website, and it's a pretty easy website to use.
Very cool. And lastly, you kind of teased us about working with someone who's a kettlebell professional. When do you think we're going to see anything on that?
You should be able to see some more information on that probably coming, if not the end of this month, by the middle of next month, some teasers on who it is and what we'll be doing. But it's definitely a name that that everybody who's been involved with kettlebells will recognize, and we're pretty excited about it and just finalizing it right now.
Awesome. We'll definitely have to keep a lookout for that. Chris, I want to thank you for your time, and for people out there who are interested in the TRX, definitely check out the site. It's www.fitnessanywhere.com. And again, going through the website, there's tons of different bundles you can check out. There's vast amounts of information. And like Chris said, there's tons of instructional videos on there as well. So definitely give it a look if you're interested in the TRX. And like I said, I'm very excited about this product, and hopefully it's going to get in the hands of many more fitness professionals and those fitness enthusiasts out there.
Okay, Kevin, I appreciate the time, and big fan, and look forward to hearing back from you and your listeners if there's anything else we can do.
Absolutely. What we'll do is we'll run this interview, and then if we have any more questions from the listeners, how about we plan on this? We'll plan maybe 2 or 3 weeks down the line. We'll do another interview, and hopefully people have gotten their hands on them by then. They'll place the orders, and we'll have you back on to answer any questions that they might have. Does that sound good?
Sounds good. Love to do it.
All right. Perfect. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks.